Those last few hours at work can drag on.
Hurry up!
Lucky for you, those afternoon blues are over. Phil Bonatti is taking you home. Time flies when we are having fun. So it's time to get behind the bench.
That's right, Behind the Bench, brought to you by Helena Agri here on a Friday. Happy Friday to everyone here as you get to listen to us on 1430 ESPN and 1430 ESPN Fresno app, 1430ESPNFresno.com. Good to have you all here. Good to have you all listening. The weekend before Thanksgiving here as we get closer and closer to the Thanksgiving holiday. And it's going to be a really, really fun show today. A lot going on in today's show, so we got a lot to get to today. But, of course, before I get to it, be sure to download our 1430 ESPN app and listen to us live and on demand. And, by the way, live, we're back streaming, right? Jorge, we're back here on the streaming side of things. So
yes,
good to have that there. Good to have that.
1430
programming, and let's be honest, we got a massive one on 1430 programming tonight as well. So with the high school football championship, the Central Section championship, the 1AA championship between Clovis East and Central should be a lot of fun. Just a quick programming reminder, that'll be a 6:45 pregame with a 7 o'clock kickoff from Daryl LaMonica Stadium, Tim Simons Field there located. I know we've been saying earlier in this week, Pat Hill going to be on the broadcast. Fortunately, he cannot make it tonight. So it will just be Paul Metters and I, but will not diminish the coverage of tonight's program and two teams. Very excited to be bringing that to you on 1430 live to you wherever you are listening to all your high school football action. And not just that game, of course, Paul Metters is going to give you updates on all of the sports going on, all of the scores going on from around the Central Section, keeping it updated because it's not just championship night for a few teams. It's also semifinal night for a lot of the lower division playoffs. So we'll get to that in a second and what's going to be on the slate tonight. But I have to go back to last night's action real quick because I just wanted to get off the top of my head here from the start. I don't get to comment much. I try not to comment much on some of the national televised games. Of course, we air them on our airwaves here. Thursday Night Football last night, of course, airing on 1430 last night with the Browns and the Steelers. But if you got a chance to listen, but then check out the highlights after, that snow bowl, snow globe kind of game is just peak football watching to me wherever you live, however you consume football. That was fun to watch last night with the opportunity. Of course, I said it, Jorge. Nothing makes sense in the NFL sometimes with the Browns and the Steelers especially. And I'm saying, of course, this is going to come down to a last possession. And here you go. Jameis Winston gets it done. He's beating the Ravens and he's beating the Steelers here. And I had a lot of fun watching last night's game with the snow. Jorge, I showed you the highlights. I know you were listening. Did they translate? I hope they translated it well on the radio side of things. But it was a fun night of watching football last night.
Yeah, well, at first it wasn't like, you know, there was no weather, and then it started getting white everywhere.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was a good game. It looked like it was gonna be, you know, one of those classic games that you should later see on like the classic channel or whatever.
Well, you're gonna be thinking about it. It's a prime time, and It was hard to see sometimes. I actually, someone posted some All-22 footage. You can't decipher anything from you know, where they have the All-22 cam.
Yeah,
nothing there that you could decipher. So you just chalk it up to a team wanted it a little bit more than another team, and the Browns got it done last night. I guess it was the first game for Jameis Winston played under 40 degrees temp, and he looked like – I wish I could play some sound bites. I wish I had some sound bites ready of Jameis Winston getting ready for the game. He's like, I'm just happy the Lord blessed me to play in some snow today, some football weather. And I'm like, you know what, Jameis, just go out and be happy. I'll take that energy over other characters in the NFL. So that was fun last night. You made the post-game show do some snow angels. But it also made me happy I was inside a living room, not in those elements, because trust me, I've been in those elements, and it's fun for about 10 minutes, and it's not fun for about 3 hours. I'm not built that way, like the Midwest folks out there in Cleveland who, I think they stayed the entire game. They're 2-8 Browns, stayed the entire game, sold out, because they wanted to see them beat the Pittsburgh Steelers on a Thursday night.
Yeah, that's how far the rivalry goes. That's how hard they go, too, because you see some guys out there with just a shirt or, like, just naked or with body paint.
Would you ever, Jorge? Would,
oh, no.
Snow game?
Uh-uh.
Nope. Do you recall, like, I'm trying to think of, I've been to a few really, really cold games, so I know what that feels like. Do you have a thought in head of, like, what's the coldest game you've ever been to, like, football-wise, that you sat for a while?
I was telling you about the time we played Templeton in high school.
Yeah.
That was pretty cold. I want to think Fresno State game. That was at night, and it was like right around this time,
uh-huh.
Right before Thanksgiving. And
yeah.
Man, it wasn't even that it was the cold. It was the wind chill.
Do you want to know the coldest game I felt like was at Fresno State ever? We have the first ever Mountain West Championship game we ever the first ever Mountain West Championship game ever hosted was us in 2013, where we hosted Utah State, and I'm convinced we may have touched high 20s that night in Fresno. Like, it was frigid. I remember really going through it in that game in early December. That's the coldest I've felt in California for a game. I mentioned the story earlier about the Wyoming Fresno State game when I went to Laramie back in the late, like, 2017 or 2018 season. But I also had my share of some NFL cold games. I went to a week 15 Patriots Broncos game. Kick was at 2:25 local time, and I believe the kickoff temp, Jorge, was about 14 degrees in Denver. And it had blizzarded all, like, the first couple days before. So there was a lot of snow everywhere. When we got to our seats, we were sitting in the upper deck, my parents and I. You would sit down, right, in the seat. But you had to dig yourself a place to put your feet, because your feet could not sit on the ground because there's piles of snow everywhere. So you had to shovel yourself a place to put your feet down, so you could sit and enjoy the game. So after a while, I was double jacketed up. I was doing great. My dad wasn't doing too hot. I had to lend him my jacket. We brought blankets too. We had blankets all across us, and it was quite an experience. But once that sunset after 2 something whatever o'clock, it set at around 4:30. We were ready to get out of there. But the Patriots got to win, so that's all that mattered. Back in, I think it was 2016 when I went.
Yeah, I don't think it ever gets that cold over here, but
if it does, that'd be national news.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But we're not going to see that tonight. What, 73 outside right now? So I wouldn't say it's unseasonably warm. I would say it's a little unseasonably warm. We're about 12 degrees above the average temp for this time of year. So game time. It's going to get cooler and cooler as the night goes. I think we're going to touch in the mid-60s, the low-60s. Nothing crazy. Before that, all that rain starts coming into town here in Fresno. But I think it's going to be a really good night of football. Not as wet and crazy and sloppy as we may have expected. Got a lot to dissect, of course, tonight with the Max Preps schedule here I'm looking at right now with what is coming up on the slate here. So 13 games on the Central Section Championship brackets here. If you want to go the rundown, I'm giving the rundown here. Morro Bay got Bishop Union tonight. You got Fresno Christian taking on Mammoth. I believe that's a what do you call it? They play nine-man, right? Nine-man football. I believe that's a nine-man football championship. Whatever that division is, 9 or 8, I never can remember.
It's because eight man
football. Okay, they play 9 man in North Dakota, so that's why I'm all messed up. So I believe Fresno Christian's got a little championship tonight against Mammoth. That's up in Mammoth Lakes. So good luck to them on their road over there. 8-player division. That's right. That's what it is. So that's what Fresno Christian's got in front of them there. Also tonight, of course, our game, Clovis East and Central. Central, 10-2 on the year. A loss to Clovis East earlier this season, but it was the closest game East has gotten this year, other than the game against West up in Utah in week one that Clovis East traveled to for that game. East trying to get to 13-0, which I believe is would be the first undefeated Central Section Championship season in Clovis East history. Also tonight, you got Kerman taking on Porterville. Kerman, a D3 school, looking to go up against Porterville tonight. We talked about them yesterday with the interview with Adrian Torres, our Student Athlete of the Week, and Damon Jenkins, of course. Get the winner of Kennedy and Madera. Madera's got a home game tonight. And if they win, they have a chance to have a home game next week if Kerman gets the upset. So we'll see on the Madera side. So that's D3. Let me see if I can do this in order. You've got D1A tonight with Frontier and Bakersfield. So Bakersfield looking to finish it off as far as that D1 single A bracket is concerned. On the D2 side, you've got Sunnyside taking on Bakersfield Christian. Sunnyside, who 8-4 is the record, but let's be honest, they actually theoretically have not lost a game of football yet played from what we've seen. So Sunnyside's got a chance to keep things rolling. They have not seen themselves lose on the field yet. So Bakersfield Christian, going to be a real tough test for those Sunnyside. What are they, Tigers out there?
Yes.
Yeah, the Tigers. They win. They're on the way to going to play either at Golden West or at Central Valley Christian. I mentioned that game. I talked to Gabe about that earlier. That is the biggest rivalry game of the night, I would say, other than Central and East, is that West and Christian game, CVC game. That should be fascinating. That's going to come down to the wire. That's in D2 side of things as well. Let me see if I can do this off the top of my head as well. Checking in on the D4 side of things. Of course, you've got Shafter Emmanuel tonight. Emmanuel looking to get to a championship game. They've won 22-21 in the last 2 weeks in their playoffs. But hey, it's survive an advanced season for them. Shafter is going to be a real tough test as they travel there. That winner, that matchup gets Kalinga and Roosevelt. Roosevelt, of course, traveling to Kalinga. Roosevelt, that 15-seeded Roosevelt team, looking to continue their strong run. Kalinga's done a pretty good job, though, of handling after a real tough test against Washington Union in round one, able to really handle Chowchilla last week. So we'll see that in the D4 side of things. D5, let's check out D5. I believe that's where Selma is playing. Selma's got Delano. So Selma and Delano, that's going to be at Delano. So Selma looking to get into a win column there and get to a Central Section champ. The winner of that will have to travel to either Morro Bay or Bishop Union in that D5 bracket. And then finally, in the D6 side of things, some good ones over here at D6, I would say. Should be a lot of fun there. Minarets got Miramonte on one side. Minarets at home. They would win. They would get the winner of Lindsay and Corcoran. Lindsay Corcoran, another good rivalry matchup. Two teams from the same league there. A good rematch, which I believe Corcoran got the best of. Let me double check that. I don't want to speak out of turn on this. We talked to both of those programs before, of course, with their Student Athletes of the Week. Lindsay and Corcoran. Lindsay Corcoran actually losing to Lindsay earlier this year, but they are the higher seed due to the, due to reasons. So should be an interesting one. Corcoran Panthers, Lindsay Cardinals. There you go.
Just a update.
Yeah, what's up?
Sunnyside's Wildcats.
Sunnyside's Wildcats. Apologies. Yeah. Apologies to the Sunnyside side of things. I know we're already irritating some people. Hey, when there's like 100-plus schools in the Central Section, I promise you, and I'm trying to unlearn some schools from North Dakota, by the way. I remember it took me like a year to get all those mascots straight from North Dakota side of things.
Edison's a Tiger.
Edison's a Tiger. Yeah. I looked at the emblem, and I'm like, what do you got? What do you got? That looks like a little tiger over there. No offense to Sunnyside. I'm trying to get it straight here as we get closer. Grizzlies and Timberwolves, though, on our channel tonight. I know that for a fact. So I want to make sure we get that correct as we move forward. All right, so we're getting started here on the show. Coming up next, I got a chance to chat with the Rams play-by-play guy, JB Long. He getting a chance to chat with us ahead of their big game on Sunday against the Philadelphia Eagles. This is our we'll get a chance to talk with him, but then, of course, Thanksgiving week, he won't be available. So this will be our last check-in of November with JB before we get into the December month. So coming up here, JB Long and the voice of the Rams coming up after this, and we'll chat more NFL in this first hour. Behind the Bench, just getting started here on a Friday. I hope everyone's doing well. You're listening to 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Here on 1430, and pleased to be bringing in once again our reoccurring guest here, voice of the Rams, JB Long, joins me here on the show. And JB, good to have you, especially after a Rams victory, although comes at the cost of my own personal Patriots fandom loss here. But you know what? A Rams win keeps it rolling here on the season, and it was a good one in New England for you guys.
It was. It was a gotta have it kind of Sunday. And they probably should have blown out the Patriots in actuality, but I give Drake May a lot of credit. I was very impressed what I saw from New England's rookie quarterback. It was a spectacular day, just really enjoyable trip to New England. Though a long six-hour flight back, thankfully for the Rams, it was their most productive day on offense this season, and so that made it a bit more enjoyable and made the time go by a little quicker.
Yeah, I would say the red zone scenarios, things playing out a little bit better in that aspect. What would you say the biggest improvements were there in cashing in on the red zone opportunities?
Well, first, I appreciate the Patriots' effort and game plan, but I think the Rams take it with the grain of salt that it probably deserves. The Patriots are not very good, and they're not a great defensive team either, so I'm sure that had a hand in it. That being said, it matters having Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp back and locked in and full week of practice. I liked how they moved Matthew's spot a little bit. They got one touchdown on a sprint roll out right, another on a keeper game, a bootleg out the left side. So moving his launch point, I think, was a good idea. And then the third red zone touchdown they got, quite frankly, was just an elite full extension layout catch by Puka Nacua that's going to be added to his forever highlight reel. It was a great, great catch. And sometimes it's about players making plays when that window gets reduced.
Yeah, it was great to get Puka kind of back and doing the Puka things, you know, especially with that amazing touchdown grab on the sideline there. It kind of landed on the football. That's probably why he was a little slow to get up. It's not great to land on the football sometimes, but just an awesome Puka day to get him going, especially in the first half. I mean, when the Rams got that going, obviously, this is a group that can contend for a division title.
No, I think that's right. He makes 100 yards receiving go by pretty quickly because he's so good after the catch. He and Matthew have a special connection, as evidenced by their record-setting rookie season last year. And so he's a gotta-have force, especially in a game like this coming up against the Philadelphia Eagles, who might be the best team on defense in the National Football League. Their young corners have been sensational. I think Washington's receivers no more than one catch or 10 yards for any of them in their most recent game, just as one bit of evidence for just how sticky that Vic Fangio's group has been in coverage. So it was a good tape to put down, and now it's a matter of can you level up against a much better opponent with bigger stakes on Sunday night at SoFi.
How reassuring was it to see a lot more, other than the Jared Verse name that pops up on the pass rush, but to see guys come in like a Braden Fisk, Byron Young, those guys making big impact plays in a game like this? I know the Patriots line is not one of the most stellar lines in the NFL, but those key plays obviously leading to the Cameron Kitchens pick at the end, those names, the more those names get incorporated, that defense starts humming a little bit.
Totally, yeah. Byron Young's got a sack in four straight games. Again, Drake May and the Patriots had a really nice game plan, and yet the Rams were kind of peppering his doorstep consistently on a few critical plays. They were able to get home, and I think you're right to highlight the diversity of the personnel and the variety of the contributors. It's like having a balanced scoring attack in basketball, if you will. you know, for so long, for a decade, it was Aaron Donald and everybody else. Not that he didn't have good running mates, but that every offensive game plan started with how are we going to block Aaron. I think in the current state of things, it's got to be torturous for opposing, you know, offensive line coaches and coordinators, because it's coming from all angles, and they run these games, these twists, these stunts where they've got four or five deep in terms of who can really puncture your pocket. And so you have to treat them equally. You have to respect every angle of the pass rush. And I think that's really benefited the Los Angeles Rams. Now, you're right to point out the Patriots probably the worst offensive line in the league. And so I'm going to kind of start to sound like a broken record here, where week to week, it's like going from a 101 class to a graduate level class. The Eagles are probably the best offensive line in the league. They definitely have the best tackles in the league. Guard to guard, they're pretty good as well. And they have a mobile quarterback. So it's a lot to contend with. I'm glad the Rams are feeling good, are healthy, have been productive on both sides of the football lately. But this will be their biggest test since at least San Francisco, I would say, in week three, if not week one in Detroit.
Yeah, so you pointed it out there with the matchup between the defensive line of the Rams and the Eagles. And let's dive right into this game, because this is the one I pointed out. This is the best matchup on the schedule, in my opinion, top to bottom, on week 12. So what are you looking for most early in this game for this defensive line to be like, okay, this things are getting done here on the defensive line against this Eagles defense? What will be the key indicator for you?
Yeah, I mean, Saquon Barkley is having an MVP-caliber season. Now, I don't know if a running back can win MVP anymore in the National Football League. Adrian Peterson was the last to do it, I think, in 2012, if memory serves. So it's kind of become a quarterback award, and understandably so. But Saquon's having one of those NFL Offensive Player of the Year-type seasons. And quite honestly, it should look even better because he's been tackled on the doorstep so many times that his quarterback, Jalen Hurts, is hawking a bunch of his touchdowns. Those who have Saquon on their fantasy football team probably already know that, are sensitive to that. But be that as it may, you know, he gets going. He gets better as the game goes on. So I think you really have to put in your work early against Barkley in this running game. And the other thing that's tricky about playing the Philadelphia Eagles is when you get them to third down, you can't just try to tackle them shy of the line to gain. Like, you almost have to play a yard or two shy of the sticks, because guess what? If they're even close, they're going for it on fourth down, and the tush push survives way past Jason Kelce. Like, it's still a force to be reckoned with. So that's without even touching their perimeter receivers and all the weapons they have in the skill game receiver and tight end. But I really, really feel like for the Rams to have any chance, they have to neutralize Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, you mentioned it with the Saquon Barkley, of course, being an opportunity to go against a guy like that. Who's key in that aspect of slowing him down? Is the linebackers the most important part of this game to at least dictate the early pace of it and Roseboom and those guys?
Yeah, that's a good name to call out. I think Christian Roseboom has put together back to back his two best games as a pro. Had the interception against Miami. New career high in tackles in New England. And then his new running mate, Omar Spates, is another one of these undrafted rookies who's really brought some juice, some run and hit ability to this linebacker level. So, yeah, it's about hitting your blocks up front, occupying those offensive linemen, which are really good ones for the Philadelphia Eagles, and then making sure that the yards after contact, the yards after catch are as limited as possible. I get it. It's a tall order. But whether you're tackling the quarterback, the running back, the tight end, or the receivers, they're all a problem with the ball in their hands, and you can't give them any extra after the catch, after the contact.
It's funny because you think of the last three home games, at least in the caliber of wide receiver, these could be arguably the three hardest wide receiver crews to guard against, right? When you had the Vikings with Jefferson and Addison, and then with the Dolphins with Hill and Waddle and company, and now you get Brown and Smith. I mean, it doesn't get easier at home for these Rams secondary guys. What, you know, and we've had our issues before early in the year, but these guys, do you feel like they're rising up to the occasion at these home games, these home primetime games that they've had the last few times against these top wide receiver crews?
You know, Phil, you're dialed in. I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's a great thing to call out. And, you know, going back to Miami, I do think they did their job. Now, I think Philadelphia is more capable of attacking you vertically than maybe Tua was at that stage of the Dolphins season. But nonetheless, threats are threats, and you have to respect these. Now, the pass rush for the Rams has been covering up a lot of deficiencies in the second and third levels of their defense. Maybe it has bought them time to grow, to build some cohesion, and also for the coaching staff to understand what they do and do not do well to try and, you know, cover up any blemishes that might exist. I think the Eagles are going to get theirs. I just think they're too good to shut down. I think for the Rams, it's about making sure that you answer blow for blow and that you hopefully don't commit the critical error, which could be a fumble, an interception, a missed field goal like we saw last week, because every possession is going to matter to get it to a final possession game where whoever has it last could win.
I think of the Eagles, you know, as a group that doesn't conventionally go after things in a conventional way when it comes to game flow. Like you said, a fourth down inside their own 30 sometimes with the push, there's a possibility of that. How much of you feel is going to be dictated about the Rams responding to maybe the aggressiveness of what the Eagles are with Coach Sirianni and kind of how he goes after a game flow?
Yeah, I think that's right. It's akin to preparing for Dan Campbell and the Lions, where you can't just assume that if you do your job on third down, you're going to get off the grass. Like, you got to buckle up. It's a double chin strap type of game where you got to expect to play, you know, 70 plays on defense, and hopefully you don't have to, but you better be ready for that type of combat. It's a tall order, but thankfully these Rams defensively have proven that they're more than just a one-dimensional, you know, rush the passer, create takeaways, create havoc type of defense. I think they've been more fundamentally sound of late, but this again is a monumental task. Although I will say, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles, if you had to undermine them in some way, shape, or form, their caliber of victory is not that high. The teams they've beaten, albeit it's a six-game winning streak, and that in the NFL is nothing to you know, brush your nose at, but, like, the teams they've beaten have not been world beaters. So I hope that, whether it's rest or rust, coming off Thursday Night Football a week ago against the Commanders, flying out here to the West Coast to play Sunday Night Football, you know, maybe the Eagles are the ones that might not quite be ready for prime time at a critical juncture, because I think the Rams do need a break, whether it's one they create or whether it's one that the Eagles offer them to pull off this upset.
Do you feel over the time when you've seen Sean McVay follow a game flow, do you feel he's a little reactionary to the games that are ahead of him, or is he more of steady in his decision making for what the situation presents in front of him?
You know, it's interesting. I do think he's kind of had to curb and adapt his approach this season, at least for the front half of it, realizing that his defense was unexpectedly outperforming his offense, and to kind of lean into that defensive identity a little bit. Unfortunately, the Rams have really struggled out of the gates. They've been held scoreless in 7 out of 10 first quarters. So almost by necessity, he's had to be adaptive. He's had to apply the information gathered from some of those early drives to generate come-from-behind success. Coincidentally, the Philadelphia Eagles are the only team that's been slower starting than the Rams in the first quarter. So I'm not sure what to make of that. It's a great question, and we'll see it play out on the Sunday Night Lights. But you know, don't cash your ticket after the first quarter, because both these Eagles and Rams have proven that the first 15 minutes have little say in the outcome.
Let's flip it to the offensive side, and I would say maybe the concern is what pressure the Eagles could provide on that offensive line. Is that the concern on that side of the ball, in your opinion?
Yeah, this is one of the better defenses that I've studied. I've always respected Vic Fangio. He's played a unique role in the Rams' history under Sean McVay. There have been a few instances, including the 2018 game in Chicago, where he basically put down the blueprint that Bill Belichick used to beat them in the Super Bowl. Then the Rams hired one of his proteges, Brandon Staley, to be their defensive coordinator. And along with Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald, they became the best defense in the NFL in 2020. So there's a lot of touch points with the Rams and Fangio and the defense that he's operating currently. They've heavily invested in their trenches, offensive line and defensive line. That shows they're menacing up front. But then these two young corners, these two rookies that they spent their first two draft picks on, they're future all pros. You know, Quinyon Mitchell is making a run at defensive rookie of the year. Cooper DeJean just fell right into their lap in the second round, and they didn't play him right away. But ever since he's broken in after their week five bye, he's been maybe the best slot corner in the league. So the matchup against Puka, the matchup against Cooper Kupp, the matchup against Matthew Stafford, and this offensive line for the Rams, this is why you sign up for it. Like, this is a playoff game before Thanksgiving, whether we want to admit it or not.
Do you feel like it's a little playoff atmosphere that they've kind of garnered? The last three home games have been primetime games, so they're not used to the bright. They're used to the bright lights for the most part at home. Do you feel like they've kind of been in that headspace for a while when they play at home?
I hope so. Yeah, I hope there's an element of that. Now, what's funny about this is the Eagles being the better team with the better record, leading their division. If this were the playoffs, they'd be hosting, right? It would be a game in Philadelphia. Instead, it's the Rams building, and yet the Philadelphia Eagles showed us last year that they're among the fan bases that can really pack that place and make it feel like a road field advantage. So it'll be an interesting cocktail on Sunday night. And, you know, I think there's a range of outcomes. Most of them probably favor Philadelphia. But I'm excited for the Rams to shoot their shot. This is a chance for them to level up. It's not a must-win in terms of their NFC West playoff hopes, but it's one that can kind of, enhance or elevate the expectation level and show that they really are contenders and not just participants in the NFC.
Certainly, and you mentioned it with the big picture, right? The NFC West in that race, the Cardinals sitting a game ahead. You get kind of a gift with the Seahawks beating the Niners, so now you sit basically above both of those teams. I mean, essentially, if you look at the schedule, the Rams have another game with the Cardinals. Technically, you run the table, you control your own destiny with this Rams team. So there's, like you said, it won't totally demoralize a playoff opportunity, but this Rams team, four out of their last five, has somehow played their way back into a situation here, and it's kind of akin to last year we were looking at it. What do you think, big picture-wise, how things are, just the outlook of this Rams season as we get closer to the tail end of it?
Well, I think the magic number is probably at least 10. That's my sense, and they're at 5 now. So they've got maybe one or two stumbles to play with, but you got to be careful about where you use them. That's why I say beating Philadelphia is not necessarily a must-have because of the remaining division games. Like, it's more important to beat San Francisco head-to-head. You finish with two at home against Arizona and Seattle. For those games to be meaningful, I think you got to find at least three of these next five. And these next five are daunting. You know, you got this game at home, a road trip to New Orleans, home to the Buffalo Bills, at San Francisco, at the New York Jets. Can you go 3-2 or better in that span? I think so. And if you do, it's going to be a thrilling race to the finish with everybody coming to your place and a chance to play for an NFC West crown. Are the Rams capable of that? I believe so. I think their upside is high enough. Have they proven that they're a playoff team yet? No, because being, you know, second in the division and eighth in the wild card framework, it feels like there's a steeper mountain to climb than teams that are in that position normally feel. And that's because some of their lost opportunities head to head against the likes of, you know, for instance, the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, of course, you'd wish you have that head to head, but that was early on the season there. So they got the Eagles this Sunday night, of course. You can listen to that on 1430, and then the Saints following them on Sunday. JB, wish you luck on the call there against the Eagles. Should be a lot of fun on Sunday night. I want to mention to our audience, we will take you off here for the Thanksgiving break, and then we'll be back following the Saints game with you. So I want to just say happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and safe travels to New Orleans and all that. And we'll talk to you in December the next time you hop on here behind the bench.
Hey, thanks. So I appreciate that, and to you and your audience as well. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone, and looking forward to continuing this great partnership in December.
Absolutely. All right, JB, we'll chat with you then. Have a good rest of your afternoon, and good luck on the call on Sunday.
All right, Phil.
All right. We'll be right back with more Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader.
The legend of the Phoenix.
All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, Valley's local sports leader. Big thank you to JB Long for joining me in the last segment, getting set for that Rams game that's going to be played Sunday night. You can listen to it right here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, all over at 5 p.m. on Sunday. So should be a fun one. I made it my game of the week. Feel pretty good about that choice. That should be a really, really good game from SoFi. What might be what was my second ranked game in the Benatti Blitz, what I thought was going to be a good one, might no longer be a good football game. And we had some news coming out today, and we'll make it a top sports story, brought to you by Valley Pure. And to me, we now have official word in the injury front that the Niners are going to be without Brock Purdy and without Nick Bosa for their game against the Green Bay Packers. That officially coming from Adam Schefter of ESPN. But, of course, Kyle Shanahan, the one confirming that at his presser today. And I already picked the Packers before that, before they were healthy. Now I feel like it's a real good opportunity for that Packer team to get a victory on Sunday. But I saw the line, and it went from 1 to 5.5, and I think it's even climbing still. Brandon Allen, the guy who will be playing quarterback for the 49ers moving forward. And so what already felt like a desperate game that the Niners needed feels even more of a desperate situation as the injuries keep piling up. And I said this from the beginning, Jorge, that, you know, the injuries, you can be as good as you can be, but once things go wrong, they can go wrong in a hurry. Have you changed your tenor just a little bit about this game coming up on Sunday?
Nah, we're fine. We're good. maybe instead of 12, we'll win by like 3 or something.
We're fine, like the dog sitting in the fire?
Exactly like that. Exactly like that.
I think of that, or I always think of the Simpsons. I'm in danger.
I'm in danger. Ralph, yeah.
Yeah, Ralphie. Yeah. It's a dangerous situation for the Niners to move forward. And I called it about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. No, maybe 5 weeks ago. It felt 2020-ish this season, right? And now with the injuries piling up, and now this is kind of where the Jimmy G injury kind of piled up in that season, if we remember, and things kind of took a downturn spiral. We could seriously, significantly see a change in this Niners season where things could go downhill real fast, because these are two very tough opponents moving ahead. And if the injuries keep piling up, you sit there at 5-7, you sit there and wonder, can you realistically keep yourself into a playoff chase? And can you realistically believe you can get 5 wins in a row and get to 10-7 and think you can win a division still with what you have facing forward? I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying the odds are stacked against you. You need a slip or two from other opponents, but it's certainly not boding well for a game against Green Bay this Sunday. Am I chalking it up as a loss already? I feel like I have to, but that's why you got to play the game. So where could the Niners win this football game? I don't know. I really don't know. Christian McCaffrey's out there. He's played with some rough quarterbacking before in Carolina. Shout out Kyle Allen, not Brandon Allen. Brandon Allen's for the Niners now. If you had Kyle Allen, maybe there's a little mojo there. But to me, you have to hope the Packers beat themselves. That's really where it's at. And that's not totally out of the realm of possibility. I've seen Green Bay almost beat themselves with this Chicago game last week. And Green Bay is not, you know, they're at the 7-3 mark right now, but it's not the Green Bay team I thought that could get to a potential Super Bowl here with the opportunities ahead of them. So am I calling the Niners dead? I mean, I kind of did on Monday. I'm not going to back down from it. Feels more deader than dead now. What do they have to prove on Sunday? And I'll ask that. I'll ask it to you, Jorge. I'll ask it to whoever's out there. You know, what do they have to prove Sunday now with all these injuries? What do they have to show you on Sunday for you to feel like things can turn around?
Things should turn around. I don't know if they could turn around.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to put something like in perspective where your number one starter quarterback is out. Kittle's going to be back, and you might have, Jennings out there.
McCaffrey's
going to be there. Defensively, you're going to be struggling.
No Charvarius Ward, by the way. He's still coming back from being gone.
You do have your leaders out there, but it's difficult to put something in perspective because you don't have Purdy, who was the guy that was going to get you the win. I mean, everything else around him was going to help out, but it feels like without him, there's the possibilities for him actually winning, and it just went completely down to, like, I don't know, like 10%. I don't know.
This is one of those injuries, too, that I'm, like, sitting here. I don't know if you saw a video. I saw a video from practice on Twitter yesterday, and I saw that he really wasn't throwing at all, which is very concerning to me. He was going through the warm-up drills, and he was kind of doing the dropbacks, but never saw him throw a football. Shoulders are finicky, man. Like, they can be sore, and they'll just be sore for a while, and then suddenly you got a rotator cuff thing going on. I don't know. Like, is this a long-term thing that the Niners are really hoping it's not? They're going to get an MRI on it. I believe there is no structural damage from what they said on the MRI, but or at least that's the hope. I don't know. I haven't seen anything on the reports of that. So what is ahead for this Niner team? If you have Brandon Allen and Josh Dobbs as your people in front of you there, it's, pack up the bags, I would say. No offense to those guys, but you just can't. You know, you can't rely on those guys to be the ones that are going to pull this roster out of its whatever. Since even with Brock Purdy at the helm, it's been 5-5 football. It's been 500 football, and 500 football ain't going to cut it in this NFL, especially in this NFC side of things. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just a sore shoulder. Brady dealt with sore shoulders all the time. He was always on the injury report, but I'm a little worried with the fact that this hurts so much that Purdy can't go out there and make it happen.
I think we still have a chance. I think I want to be optimistic. One of the things that will make me more optimistic is if Williams is out there. If Trent Williams could be out there in the game, then I would be more happy, and to see it would be a better game.
Yeah,
I would tell you that.
There's a world, where you can Jordan Mason it up and go crazy on the ground. I don't know. Maybe there is. And maybe there's a world where you just run the ball 40, 50 times. But to me, teams are going to key in on that. That Packer defense is going to key in on that. So where do you attack on the play action with Brandon Allen at a quarterback? Because I think that's what you're going to do on a lot of those pass plays called. And whether you can nail it on there. I don't know weather-wise what's happening. I saw snow a couple days ago. I don't know what it's going to look like in Green Bay in a couple days, too. It's going to be the frozen tundra, as we say. It's going to be cold. The Niners, I believe, haven't played a regular season game in Green Bay in quite some time. I think it was 2016, regular season. I looked it up.
Oh.
Yeah. They played a lot of playoff games there. Here, I got the sheet in front of me here from the Niners. Yeah,
you think Daniel Jones?
Is he available?
he might be able to come.
Hey,
come by Sunday.
You know,
you think he's doing anything on Sunday?
I don't think so.
Might be a little bit free.
I don't think he's doing anything at all. 2018 was the last time the Niners were in Green Bay. That was a Packer win, but 33-30. I believe that was in October of 2018, before all the really good Niners stuff happened in 2019 and beyond. So
yeah, that was we lost by a kick.
Yep. And The Niners really, yeah, there's only been one game in Green Bay since. How do all these games end up being in San Francisco between the Packers and the Niners? I knew they were due to play in Green Bay after a while. Yeah, I remember this. You know, 14 playoff game, you got the 22 playoff game. So there's a whole lot there that, you know. Kyle in the cold temperature, too. This Niner team in the cold temperatures. I don't know. We'll see how it all plays out. Usually weather not really a good thing for the Niners team as well. So injuries, frustration, it's all coming to a head here for the Niners moving forward. But, you know, be sure to tune in on 1430 at 1225 for the pregame and 125 for kickoff. So see it all play out. Listen to it live. Right here on the flagship. Anyways. All right, Jorge, we got another hour coming up.
Yeah.
Got some things to talk about. Of course, we got Paul Metters coming in after the break. We'll talk some more Fresno State football preview as well. Hey, my Warriors, a win away from an NBA Cup knockout stage. I'm all in. I'm all in to get the win tonight against New Orleans. They start in about 35 minutes, so paying attention to that. We'll give the schedule for the rest of the week as well, wrap up the show. Hour number two is coming up next here on 1430. Stay with us. Also, be sure to stream us. We're all everywhere here on the 1430 side as well. So
we're back.
We're back. We're back. Come back for hour number two right after this.
Those last few hours at work can drag on.
Hurry up.
Lucky for you, those afternoon blues are over. Phil Bonatti is taking you home. Time flies when we are having fun. So it's time to get behind the bench.
All right, welcome back. That's right, behind the bench here on 1430, brought to you by Helena Agri here on a Friday. Final hour of the show before we get you set for tonight. Clovis East and Central High, Friday Night Lights. Class 1AA championship football, and we got your high school football coverage right here on the Central Valley Sports Leader, of course, and no better person to bring in here to talk about it than the man who's going to be calling the game tonight with me, Paul Metters, here in studio here on a Friday, and very, very, very exciting times, to say the least, about tonight. And Paul, we've been sitting here, we were 7 days waiting for this game, and right after we signed off last week when Clovis East demolished Clovis, you know, and as we get closer and closer, hours away now, how are you feeling on this Friday about this game?
Well, here we are, right? A week earlier than years past, but ever since you and I started the broadcast in August, all the weeks leading up to this big Valley Championship, Central Section Championship game with the big boys. I'm feeling really good for a few reasons. Obviously, the game tonight, pumped to call it with you. But this is the beginning for us teachers of Thanksgiving. This is Thanksgiving break. And, you know, I'm sure, are you going to at least get Thanksgiving off, Phil?
I will.
Get a couple days.
Most certainly. Well, the show will probably take a hiatus on Thanksgiving, Black Friday side of things.
Okay. All right. Yeah. But us teacher folk, we get the whole week off. And so I'm pumped about that. So this game tonight has been on the calendar for a long time. It signals the championship Friday, mm-hmm. championships next week, and Thanksgiving, man. It doesn't get any better than this.
So we're gonna dive right into all of the playoff action here, preview all the games. 13. Hard to believe we're narrowed down to 13 games in the Central Section. It just goes by that quickly, right, Paul? The semifinals and the championships.
Oh, it does. Like, you blink and it's already October. You blink again and then it's November. And, you know, that one of the highlights for calling games with you is halftime and talking about all the other games that are happening at that moment. And, you know, I think 1 week there was like 61 games in the Central Section, and now we're down to the dirty 13, I guess.
The dirty 13, to say the least, here at the Central Section. And we're going to give it a little run through of it all here. But, of course, we got to highlight the top game of the night for us, the game you'll hear on 1430 live on our radio and streaming. We got the streaming back, thankfully, so everybody can listen to it on the streaming side as well. Thank you to everybody who's working on getting the streaming back, because I know a lot of people use that to listen to our broadcast. So, Clovis East and Central. When I sit and look at this game, you see Central with the experience, of course, of being in a game like this versus the inexperience of Clovis East in a situation like this, in a game like this. Yet East We clearly see and know what their gun, the guns they have in this game. But I always sit there and think, like, I think of 2018, right? I think of the Patriots going up against Kansas City with the young guns, the Kansas City group that everyone thought was going to be emerging down to Tom Brady. But yet Central here is kind of that Patriots long stalwart kind of team. How are you looking at the storyline here going into this one? Because that's the one I've been keying in on into this one.
That's a great point. And it's interesting. You're exactly right. Central, the back-to-back-to-back championships, 17, 18, 19, the state championship. 7 out of the last 8 years, including this year, in the D1, the highest level in the Central Section title game. I would say the coaching staff, right, and the tradition, experience for Central. However, check this out. They start 12 sophomores. We're going to see 12 sophomores on the field, a lot of juniors, and really only 3 seniors is going to get significant playing time for Central. The lower levels, the feeder levels, you can say, are loaded. So this could signal another really strong run for the Central Grizzlies. And then you flip to Clovis East. It wasn't that long ago, Phil. 2018, the Timberwolves were 0-10.
Wow.
Right? To flip that, six years now in the championship game, 12-0. You talk about the senior experience that this team has. Talk about Duvall, Ty Miller, the quarterback. I mean, tons of seniors tonight in that game. But they haven't played in a game this big in their entire life, right? So experience, yes. Experience, no, for the Timberwolves. Experience, yes, as far as the coaching staff and Central being, you know, like the program in the last 10 years. But no, because they got a bunch of young guys.
Aside from the game between, I was mistaken when I said Central played East the closest. I forget about the West game
that
they played early in the year. I want to make sure I acknowledge that. I've been saying that a few times on the air. But aside from inside the track, inside of all the non-play other than that West game against the team in Utah, Central has given East the biggest test. From an eyeball standpoint, that game, what did it teach you about what this matchup may present tonight?
Yeah, that was the game that was 34-26. And if you remember, it was a Thursday night game, so I was able to watch it as a fan, right, with the little eye in the media as well. Central had a chance to tie the game. They were at inside the 10-yard line, 4th and 2. They decided to run the football, and it was close. They came out for a measurement. They didn't get the first down. Clovis East took over. If they score on that possession, get the 2-point conversion, we got a tie football game. And going back and looking at the film, the Central coaches are saying that there were really, and I don't think they counted that play, but there were 2 other plays in that game that if it goes Central's way, they probably beat Clovis East. So for a young team like that away, you know, they're playing in La Monica Stadium again, you know, for them to be that close, a couple plays away from winning that game, what does that say about tonight, right? And that's what the coaching staff is teaching, right, or preaching all week is, guys, if we could stay in the football game, turn 2 or 3 plays in our favor, we can win this thing.
You got the skill, speed, all that from Central side. The coaching experience, some of the guys who have been in these games before. But one of the key factors, which people forget about in high school, and I was talking to Coach Jenkins about this a little bit off air when I was talking to him, like, special teams, man. Does East have the best special teams unit in the Central Section? I argue they do. And I argue that's a major factor in what they have going into this one. Such a weapon for them that has been given them results here in the most part. I think people underrate what they can do on that aspect of the game. And the fact that with that edge, they can really, you know, get a lot more chances.
100% agree. Special teams in a game like this are huge. So I can go back to 2014. Clovis High had they were the high seed. They hosted Liberty of Bakersfield in the Central Section Championship game. They were obviously favored. Josh Hokett, a bunch of dudes. Looking back now, Liberty had a quarterback named Jordan Love.
not too bad.
And I remember talking, it was actually to Andy Bogart, who's going to be at the game tonight. We've been texting all week about this matchup. And he said, Paul, take a look at special teams, right? Liberty has a significant advantage. And I kind of dismissed that. I'm like, oh, skill position players. You know, I felt like Clovis was actually better. And sure enough, it reared its ugly head. Liberty kept having the best field position, I think they kicked two field goals in that game. So that is huge. And Clovis East, we've seen them plenty of times this year, Phil. Clovis East special teams is the best in the central section. Their kicking game, talking about punting, I'm talking about kickoffs, I'm talking about field goals. They, you know, their guy can kick field goals well. Kick returns, right? Harold Duvall
break one.
He's broken a couple, and in that central game, he took the opening kickoff. It was fumbled a little bit lucky, right? He picked it up, and
I think I've seen Booker return one a few times.
That's
too,
right. So special teams advantage to Clovis East.
Yeah, should be a good one. We won't make predictions, of course. You know, we're calling the game. We're going to keep it neutral. I'm going to pull the Kirk Herbstreit, of course. Just if you had one key, I know you're going to give more keys, but if there's one that's just staring at you like a blinking red light at you, what's one that you're just to tease the people about tonight?
I think Central is going to bring some pressure, and the offensive line for Clovis East has to be ready for that. If you know Clovis East has, you know, Tamara Horton in the backfield, you know, he's only what, about $150, $155, so it doesn't weigh a lot. So I'm talking about pass protection, mm-hmm. right? So if Central is able to somehow do some twists, maybe blitz a linebacker at a perfect spot, they could put some pressure on Ty Miller. Now, as far as escapability, decision-making, Ty Miller's off the charts, right? Does a phenomenal job with that. But for Central to be able to put some pressure on Ty Miller and get to him and disrupt him a bit, I think that would be huge for Central. So the offensive line for Clovis East has to step up. The defensive coordinator for Central, if he can dial it up and mix some of those blitzes in the right spot, do some twists, and get to Ty Miller, I think that'd be a definite key for the Grizzlies.
Let's go to some other games tonight, of course, and we'll keep an update on all the other games from around the central section. One single A, Bakersfield Frontier. You got any thoughts on this one up into that one in Bakersfield?
Well, if you guys are on Twitter, you got to follow Trevor Horn. He's a great guy. He does a fantastic job following all the action down in the Kern County area. So he's going to be covering that game. It's a huge deal. It's a huge deal for both. You know, a lot of people say, well, Division I's broken down into 18 divisions. Bakersfield should be up. Yeah, I agree, right? That's a traditional power that you would like to see.
I think it could have been in that Union spot maybe, or that Sanger spot.
Have they been the 6th, 7th, 8th best team in the Central Section all season? I think so. They only had that one loss to Bakersfield Christian. You know, Frontier, they've bounced around a bit. Remember, a couple of years ago, they upset Kingsburg. Kingsburg was a high seed. But I was like, be careful, Frontier. They got some dudes. Last year, Central beat them in the big boy division. I just got a strange feeling that Frontier, the 3 seed, is going to pull this one out. Mm.
All right.
Just call it a hunch.
D2. Both games interesting on this bracket with Bakersfield Christian and Sunnyside. Sunnyside traveling south tonight. But I think biggest rivalry of the night, Golden West and CVC. I know some Golden West people who graduated from there. They despise CVC kids. They despise the CVC side. So I think there's a lot of juice in D2 with Sunnyside and the upset potential. And technically, they have not lost a game, even though they forfeited 4 games this year. What intrigues you about the D2
side? Well, if you're Sunnyside, right, you know, you got nothing to lose. If I was Bakersfield Christian, I'd be a little scared of that offense. They're playing with the chip on their shoulder. I think we're going to see a lot of points in that game. The key to me is Bakersfield Christian's defense. And if they can, you know, somehow, you know, hold Sunnyside to under 20 points, I think they got a good chance. But that's a scary matchup mm-hmm. for Bakersfield Christians for the Eagles. And that bottom side, Phil, you're right. And there's a reason, Phil, why Visalia schools do not schedule CVC. You will not see any Visalia City schools play Central Valley Christian in anything. You know, it's the age-old question of, oh, they're always stealing our players. And, you know, Bryson Donaldson is a huge example. He's at El Dumonte his freshman year. CVC with Coach Arox, they just kept getting better and better as the season rolled on. Golden West, controversial ending to last week's game against Kingsburg. That's a whole deal I could probably spend about 10 minutes on, but they quote-unquote escaped with a victory in that one. They were allowed a single play with 1 second left. They scored and kicked the extra point. All eyes are going to be on that game in Visalia. Like anybody who's anybody is going to go watch that football game.
I think, in my opinion, you know, it's like anytime I feel like there's a game where you're on borrowed time a little bit in the playoffs, sometimes it comes back a little bit on the karma side. So if you're going to talk about Golden West, and they do deserve to be in this spot because they played, you know, as good as anybody in the season. But sometimes when you feel like a game like that, you know, for all intents and purposes, potentially gifted to you in a way, you feel like the other team can pull it out. So maybe I sit there and like, okay, CVC Sunnyside might be that Central Section.
Ooh,
championship.
All right.
Might be taking that little prediction there. D3, this is another fascinating one, right? With I talked to Kerman yesterday, talked to Damon Jenkins and Adrian Torres. Of course, congrats to him being our Student Athlete of the Week for this past week with his performance and beating Garza, getting that win over Garza after losing to him earlier this season. Kerman's got Porterville. They're looking to keep being the road warriors. And then on the other side, Madera's got Kennedy tonight. Are both top seeds, they're facing a little, it's not an easy matchup for both top seeds in this
game. Yeah, you know, Kerman, they've been here before. Last year, they were the road warriors, and, you know, I would not be surprised if they went on the road and beat that number one Porterville team. You know, there's just something about Coach Jenkins, and you've talked to him a few times. You run through a wall for that guy. He's got experience. De La Salle Hall of Famer, one of Pat Hill's favorite players of all time. He's a great coach. They're going to have a great game plan. I wouldn't be surprised if Kerman wins that one. And then, right, Kennedy, I kind of predicted on my show that they would make it to the championship game.
What did Pelinelli feel about that?
I don't know. I didn't get any text from him, thankfully. But, that's a big game for Madera, right? I think it's the only game in town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's different style of offense. So you got the spread offense of Madera. You got that, double tight wing T type offense that Kennedy runs, and they got some dudes. So Madera better be ready to hit somebody and make some tackles, because it's like that old ball control type offense.
Yeah.
That's scary, because all of a sudden it could be the middle of the second quarter and it's 7-7 or 7-3 or 7-0. You're like, oh crap, we got to score here.
Well, what's interesting, we saw Madera kind of face that kind of offense when they faced Sanger. Yeah. I thought they hung well with them and that their offense could stick with them and they don't make as many mistakes on the Madera side. We've seen them execute pretty well against that Sanger thing, all things considered. So if you're talking about a Kennedy offense that looks similar, you know, maybe we see a little bit more adjustments to go back to that Sanger tape.
Yeah, I agree. And selfishly speaking, Phil, how about a Madera-Kerman matchup in the finals?
Hey, we'll take it. would want to do a Friday night broadcast there from another Central Section. Even Kerman Kennedy, you never know. So we'll see how it all shapes out. D4. And how about Emmanuel? Just going on this interesting run. They've won 22-21 in their last two playoff games. How about that? They get Shafter. I don't know if that'll be 22-21 as a final there for Emmanuel again. It might take a little bit more on that side of the ball. And then on the flip side, Kalinga and Roosevelt. And Roosevelt's an interesting team at the 15 side going out to Kalinga. Kalinga's really with an impressive game against Chowchilla last week. You said that would have been a little danger, but they showed up 35-7. What do you make of D4?
Well, look at that defense, right? Chowchilla, we pumped up their offense, and they only scored 7 points against that stingy Kalinga defense. I mean, Coach McCoy for Roosevelt, Gabe Camarillo, friend, did a great interview with them and how, you know, they've come together as a team and how they're playing just their best football of the season at the right time, 15 seed. Emmanuel at Shafter, that's a long drive from Reedley to Shafter, but that's stingy defense, right? Defense wins championships, mm-hmm. Phil, you know that. And, you know, Emmanuel's got a really good defense, but Shafter, I think they're a top 15 team overall.
Really?
In the Central Section, to be honest. They got their quarterback healthy. He missed, I think he was out in week two with a broken collarbone. He was able to come back a couple weeks ago. That guy is a dude. He won a Central Section title against Carruthers as a freshman, and now he's a junior. So there's some experience on that Shafter side. That's a really, really neat place to watch a football game. They got this state-of-the-art scoreboard and the only show in town as well. Wow. So that's going to be a great environment.
It's going to be exciting in that level. Going to D5 real quick. Bishop Union, Morro Bay. We don't need to spend too much time on it. But the Selma side against Delano. The Selma going down to Delano. Selma getting a big win over Hoover. Not a convincing win. 43-20 against that Hoover Patriots side. So we could highlight Selma.
Is that a
here.
7 against
7-6.
7-6
against Delano. Delano the 6 seed who upset Strathmore. last week.
I was a little surprised on that
one. Yeah, big 22-point victory, 38-16. So what do you make of this defense?
Well, Bishop Union has been there before. Last year they won the title. All I know, it's very, very cold.
Yes.
So from Morro Bay to Bishop Union, I should have researched that, see how long that drive is. But, yeah, that's going to be a tough one for Morro Bay. You know, I think, it's kind of a crapshoot in that 7-6 game. How about the Go Bears, man?
Yeah.
Right? Go Bears. Great story. Last year, or last few years, you know, even COVID, I think they didn't play any games in COVID. Matt Logue was the coach and went to Sanger. That program's been resurrected. And, you know, Selma's got a lot of pride in their football. So, yeah, I would love to see Selma advance to the championship game.
Not in my favorite bracket, the Division Six, just because I love small town high school football. Minaret's got Miramonte, but how about this one in Corcoran tonight? A nice rivalry matchup in a playoff semifinal. You can't ask for many more with Corcoran and Lindsay.
And Lindsay.
That's some of the East Valley stuff that's going to be really fun to, watch
the
over
Cardinals.
There. Yeah, how about that? How about those matchups?
I mean, that's great, right? I'm very familiar with all those schools. Coach Pulliam's doing a fantastic job at Minaret. A magical season. I think they've dropped a couple games. They started off 5-0, dropped a couple games. But, yeah, they're one game away from history. They've never been in a Central Section championship game. So, I expect Minaret to win. Lindsay, yeah, it just seems like Lindsay just is always in these tight games. I think that one's going to go down to the wire.
I think Lindsay got the best of Corcoran last week, but I'm trying to remember that Julian Hernandez, his name is. Let me just make sure I get that right. One of our student athletes of the week. This guy is a monster if you have not seen him from Corcoran. I think he's 6'6", something like that, some big tight end. Julian Fernandez, Corcoran.
He's a basketball player, too.
If you know the Corcoran basketball.
He is a load. Yeah,
he played
in the
tight end
championship last year.
I think the week he won the student athlete of the week, he had like over 200 yards on like five catches with like three touchdowns.
Geez.
He is a monster at a tight end position. So if he goes crazy.
Got to double team that guy.
that's the player to watch. And finally, Fresno Christian's got Mammoth tonight as well. You know, eight-man football, always got to love that. Mammoth, the one seed, Christian, the two seed, so they're going to Mammoth tonight.
That's a drive as well.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Always eight-man football. I know we were trying to get some eight-man football in the air this year, just didn't work out schedule-wise, but should be a fun one there as well. So there you go. Those are the games on the Central Section. And all in all, I know, Paul, you're going to be breaking it down on the broadcast tonight, of course, with all the things going on. Of course, we'll be very preoccupied with the game tonight as well. should be a lot of fun in that one. Thankfully, we're not going to play in watch the conditions we had in last night's Thursday night game. I don't know if you were watching that.
I didn't. I missed that one, but I heard it was just miserable.
Hey, I got to get your thoughts before you go. You were at the Fresno State game on Wednesday, a men's basketball game.
I was.
We were both there. I had my thoughts. I've shared those. What were your thoughts? Was that the first time you saw that group in person?
Yeah. I wanted to go to the Bakersfield game, wasn't able to go. It was kind of the Vance Wahlberg offense that I've seen over his coaching career, but you could tell it's still early. I thought there was a lot of defensive lapses, to be honest, a lot of one-on-one stuff, guys flying, not getting in great position defensively. I thought that that the other team would help me out on the name.
Prairie View
A&M. Yep, from Texas. I thought they got to the rim a little bit too much. And the shooting for Fresno State wasn't that good, but I thought they got to the rim like a Coach Vance Wahlberg offense does, get to the rim, get to the line, score points that way. You know, there's some dudes on that team, right? When you got some 6'6", 6'7" guys that could play inside and outside, that's...
Yeah, you saw Morsek play, and what if I told you they hadn't played with them five days ago, his first time he was on the court.
Really?
Since tearing his ACL.
Oh, gosh.
So they hadn't even practiced with the guy all offseason, and he looked like he fit in like a glove in the offense on Wednesday.
Well, he's grabbing offensive rebounds, had that little baby jump hook, right? Left-handed,
right-handed. Classic, right?
All, yeah. Old school, yeah. So, you know, he did a good job. You could tell. A little bit frail, but, you know, he's a presence.
Four guys in double figures, and they played without their starting point guard in Zion Collins. So, to me, I would give that a B-plus, A-minus effort for last all things considering. And the hope is you get that starting guard back with Collins, and then you start integrating more guys. I like depth. That's always, I think, a plus in college basketball when you get guys who can – how many guys can get into a double-figure situation? I like what we got. And, of course, the next home game, a massive one.
San Diego State.
San Diego State. So you got to get up in a hurry for that one. I'm optimistic, but I'm an optimistic person. I like being optimistic rather than the guy who's just going to worry about everything. So
let Vance Wahlberg worry about things.
He worries about it too much.
He worries about it a lot. But, you know, I mean, what they scored, 90, ended up being 94-83.
Yeah.
Right? They're going to do that more than a few times this year. So entertaining, to say the least. And it was a little bit of a late arriving crowd. Like, I got there.
There was a good,
about 30 minutes before tip off. I was like, oh man. And then it filled up pretty good. So I was like, this is a nice showing.
I was sitting there in the set seats and I was like, all right, this is kind of a, you know, so. But when I got to the floor, and I think in the second half, I felt the energy a little bit more in the game, especially when it got cut to 5, when we were like, okay, what's going on here? But all in all, I thought it was a really good effort, and got a game tomorrow. I think it won't be happening during the football game, so I'll probably check it out. 2 o'clock, I think they tip off against Long Beach State. So
there's lots of good action this weekend. Oh, my gosh.
You got your show tomorrow, of course. A little preview real quick before I let you go. A
little preview while Gabe's coming on the show. And I reserved it, obviously, whoever wins the game tonight.
There you go.
So either Coach Biggs or Coach Nagel's coming on, and obviously, you know, I'm going to hope the winning coach, right? And, it's always good to talk to those guys. Yeah, and, you know, I got the utmost respect for both of those coaching staffs.
Yeah.
They are great guys, full access. You know, I've gone to many practices for Clovis East, and, you know, offensive coordinator Colby Hunter will come on and, you know, he'll come over and talk to me and, you know, spend about 10 minutes with me. So and Coach Biggs is exceptional as well. That guy is, you know, he's a borderline genius, I'll be honest.
Absolutely.
He knows his stuff. And those Central Grizzlies, they may not be favored in this one, but you better believe they're going to come ready to play.
Should be a good one. Very excited about tonight. From when we started with Clovis West versus Edison to this one, we have had some fantastic games this year, and hopefully we got another classic tonight on 1430.
No, we are. I'm excited. You're going to do an awesome job on play-by-play.
I will
as
do my
always.
Best.
And it's great for us because it's a win-win situation.
Exactly.
Right? Both these teams are phenomenal, so may the best team win.
May the best team win. All right, Paul, we'll see you over at La Monica, and let's have a good broadcast.
Absolutely.
All right. Paul Metters here in studio. All right, we'll be right back with more Behind the Bench here in 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Thank you to Paul Metters for joining me in the last segment. We took a lot of time there just because we are just so excited about tonight's action, including Clovis East versus Central. Cannot wait to get the call on that one. That, in the pregame, by the way, 6:45, kickoff at 7. Don't miss it. Don't miss it. Please don't miss it. What are you doing if you're not paying attention to all this high school football action? You know, another reason why I would sell you on this game tonight, there's some future college stars out there as well, including some good Fresno State potential talent out there as well. I'm just saying, if you want to see some future talent for Fresno State football, look no further than that game tonight. Should be a good time. Good excuse to get out there if you are a true Fresno State fan.
Yeah, definitely. There's going to be some players out there that are going to make the NFL, probably.
The statistical probability of that is for the track record of these programs, certainly you can beat the odds. And by the way, you're not going to be sitting in any rain tonight, I don't think. I don't think. Knock on wood. Where's the wood? I don't know. Crap.
My app said Yeah, my app said that last night it was going to rain. Then it said, no, it's not going
to
rain.
I think it's getting pushed back to like 2 a.m. tonight. So we don't get quite that situation.
Atmospheric
river.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. And you also got the bomb cyclone. Everyone's all worried about the bomb cyclone. I think you're fine, everyone. I think we're cool. All right. Let's look at a little college football tomorrow night, by the way. No promises on no rain tomorrow night. Very interesting situation tomorrow night. Can I go a little crazy harebrained situation going on here with Jorge about how Fresno State can affect the college football playoff tomorrow? You ready? Yeah. Ready to follow me down this logic ladder?
Let's go. I'm with you.
How we can affect the college football playoff, that playoff that everyone sees, that the 12 teams that everyone is looking to play in that bracket that everyone's been waiting for, dying to see. Well, here's your answer. Here's your answer why Fresno State can affect it. Because let's follow the logic here. Fresno State, you can beat Colorado State. And if you beat Colorado State, you incentivize the computers to potentially allow UNLV to get in a tiebreaker against Boise State in a conference championship. UNLV playing tonight in San Jose State, by the way. Not an easy game for UNLV, favored by 8. So I'm not saying that's a shoe-in, but UNLV has to win tonight. UNLV would be a very tough matchup for Boise. UNLV could easily beat Boise. UNLV, with some certain things that could happen, could get into a college football playoff. They're ranked 24. I want some chaos, by the way, in these conference championships. I'm looking at the Army Conference, the American. Could you imagine if Army lost? Could you imagine if Boise lost? And then if you look at the Big 12, like, I'm trying to think, BYU and who else is in that contending? Colorado, right? Two of those three conferences in the Big 12, right, would get in. Right.
Well, also you got, well, whatever happens with the Army is going to change something because Army plays Notre Dame.
Well, that still puts them in a conference championship still because Notre Dame is not in their conference. But if they beat Notre Dame, then I would say plug Army in right away.
Yeah.
But Army's, that's not going to do anything to their standing but as far if, as in the American
Army,
is concerned.
If Army losses, then
I don't think it matters because I still think they would be a strong – that's losing to the number 6 team in the country that everyone believes is Notre Dame is great, even though everyone knows they're not because they lost to NIU. Still don't understand that. You don't get slotted any further down because you lose to the number 6 team in the country. If you give them a good fight, lose by 7, Army gets slotted, what, to 20? Down from 19 to 20, they don't move much, right? So – Army's still in that contender spot for a group of 5.
I don't know. They usually lose 4 spots. So.
Well, no, it's the 5. It's the 5 spots. So what are the 5 conferences that, well, they got, you got ACC, you got Big 12, you got Big 10, and you've got SEC. Those are the Big 4. But the Big 12 is currently in a crisis situation where it could all beat each other, and then suddenly everything goes wacky doodle, and you could have Army get in, and whoever the Mountain West champion get in, if things turn a certain way, right?
Yes.
I don't see that scenario being totally crazy, but BYU's got Arizona State. That's not a given. Colorado State's got Kansas. Kansas has been very weird. Very weird team, by the way. 4-6, still in a
bowl eligibility. Arizona State is a dangerous team.
Yeah, they are. They weren't dangerous last year when we played them.
No, not last year, but.
That's tomorrow's matchup. But like I'm saying, all of this stems, you could affect the playoff because you could affect the idea of Boise getting a cupcake into the Mountain West Championship. Because let's be fair, I think Boise's absolutely beating Wyoming tomorrow. Boise then, who do they got? Week 12. Oregon State, so it doesn't matter. Boise's in with a win over Wyoming. That's a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And from what I've seen this year, no disrespect to what Colorado State has put together. I don't see them as a team that will beat Boise.
Boise could lose, and if UNLV loses, they'll still go in.
But Boise would lose hosting rights if Colorado State beats us. They would be at Colorado State.
Oh, okay.
Think about that.
Yeah.
So there's that on the line. All in all, Boise slotted in that fourth best conference champ between the Big 12 and the American. So give them a tougher opponent. They lose the conference champ. Boise's automatically out of the talk of being in the playoff. It doesn't matter what happens. Boise will lose their ranking, and you have to be a conference champ. So then UNLV would slot in. But then I don't think UNLV would have the best resume unless Army somehow loses in their conference championship. Then you're dying to look for somebody, and I think UNLV could certainly get in after that. All I'm saying is Fresno State has a chance to cause a little bit of chaos if they win and get rid of this Colorado State team that we know is going in as a lame duck into a Mountain West championship. Come on. You can't be serious that they're a team that can beat Boise. But unfortunately, because of the, you know, terrible way the schedule works with the Mountain West, and you can't play like all the good teams, and you have no way of determining who's good in what conference because nobody plays each other every year. I'm sorry. That's the most I'm rooting for. I want an actual champion out of this Mountain West, not Colorado State going in to get blown out 52-6 against Boise in Idaho in a couple weeks. I'm not down for that. So for the most part, that's why I want Fresno State to win. Oh, and let's be bowl eligible. That'd be nice, too.
That would be nice.
You know what I mean? For the sake of argument here, I want to see the two best teams play for a conference championship. And by the way, just on a larger side of things, these super conferences that are being built make me so mad because you're not going to get the best teams playing in a conference championship because you get teams not playing each other. You get like an eight-game schedule where nobody's playing the right teams, and then you have no frame of reference as who good is it or not and who actually is supposed to be in those conference championships. And then you go to computers, which what I thought we turned away back in 2013 in the BCS championship. Like, what are we doing here? We're going back to the computer rankings and whatever. Like, I'm losing my mind. We're in a vicious cycle, and college football is a mess. But I feel like I'm just saying that in a louder point.
Yeah, that's where we are now. We went full circle. Full circle. And, How good is Oregon?
I was having this conversation with one of our coworkers yesterday. Is there any team you can bet on? Like, do you feel like you 100% can bet on them to win a college football championship this year? Like, is there a single team you're like, okay, let me go down the list, Jorge. Oregon.
No.
Ohio State.
No.
Texas.
No.
Penn State.
No.
Indiana.
No.
Notre Dame.
Nope.
Alabama.
No.
Miami.
No.
Ole Miss.
No.
Georgia.
Nope.
Tennessee.
Nope.
Where is the champion, Jorge?
I would say, like,
someone's doing it.
They're going to have one loss. Or they're going to go undefeated like Oregon.
I just can't trust a team. I think if I had to put my money on somebody, it'd have to be Oregon. I think it has to be.
Texas, if they only play in Texas.
We'll see a lot from that A&M-Texas game. But let me be fair. I'm talking to whoever is predicting A&M over Texas. I'll tell you this right now. I've seen enough A&M football in the last 20 years to know A&M surely loses that game every single time. Every single time we believe A&M can win that game, A&M loses that game. I promise you that. Everyone's going to be so mad.
I'm constantly telling my friend, you know, if Texas will play outside of Texas, you know, they would lose.
Yeah.
But most of the games are in Texas.
Well, that's what you get when you pay whatever money you get to have that program. All that oil money. That big oil
Texas
money.
Oil money.
Texas oil money going into Austin. Anyways.
The Lamborghinis.
Those Lambos. Like I said, college football's a mess. But it's a beautiful mess. Because let's be fair. We're all suckers for a good game. I'm down for that. So that's all I got to say. Anyways. Jorge, let's wrap up the show and close it out on a high note on this week. We'll be right back behind the bench on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Morning. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno. Just a few minutes left in our show before we sign off for the week, sign off for the weekend. Head out to Friday Night Lights tonight for some high school playoff football. This is one of the many things on our schedule here coming up. Of course, got some more stuff later this weekend. So why don't I give a little bit of the schedule for this weekend? Like I said, 6:45 pregame between the Clovis East Timberwolves and the Central Grizzlies at La Monica, 7 p.m. Myself, Paul Metters, on the call for a 1AA championship. Should be a great broadcast. Saturday, tomorrow, that is tomorrow, Central Valley Sports Report with Paul Metters. You'll have all the reaction and recap from tonight's Central Section playoff matchups. That's at 10 to noon on 1430 and also the 1430 app. Live from First String Sports. Also on 1430 on Saturday, Lakers and the Nuggets. Lakers, by the way, lost by one to Orlando, a tough loss. I was saying this is an interesting three-game stretch. I would start validating what the Lakers are doing if they go 2-1. So here we go. You got to get two in this next two. You got to beat the Nuggets. You got to beat the Suns, in my opinion, for me to kind of feel a little bit better about what's going on with that Lakers team. It was a really soft schedule in that six-game win streak. But they got a true test tomorrow. Should be interesting. 7:15 pregame with a tip-off at 7:30. Sharks and Sabres. This is a massive one if you're a Sharks fan, by the way. Joe Thornton, jersey retirement. Only the second ever player in Sharks history to get his jersey retired. And Patrick Marleau. That game is going to be on 790 at 5 p.m. puck drop from San Jose. It's going to be a very special night. I'm sure it's going to be a very special broadcast. Be sure to listen to Dan Rizanowski and company there on 790. On Sunday, we got football. A lot of football. Niners, Packers. Here we go. It's going to be on 1430. It's a pregame at 1225. Kickoff at 1:25. And then on 1430 on Sunday Night Football, you got Eagles and Rams. That's at 5 p.m. Over on the 790 side, you got a pregame of 1235 for the Raiders and the Broncos. Raiders looking to win, what, 9 home games in a row against the Denver Broncos. They got a kickoff at 1:05 from Las Vegas. And then Monday, we'll be back with our regularly scheduled programming. Sportsline Bulldog Hour, Tony D, 2 to 3. I'll go from 3 to 5. Live from Major Wager, me and Ed's Victory Grill, as we get you set for Harbaugh Bowl number 3 between the Ravens and the Chargers. John Harbaugh 2-0 against Jim. Should be interesting. We'll see if Jim can finally get best big bro and see if the Chargers can get a victory over the Ravens. Of course, the last time they played, Jorge, that Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's Super Bowl.
I had fun watching that.
Sure you did. Hey, sure you did.
Won a lot of money on squares in that Super Bowl. I remember it very distinctly. Also that.
Do you remember the lights went out?
Lights went out, yeah, of course. So. Then, allowed more consumption of food and beverages at the party. Yeah. So that's on the slate. Sharks hockey also Monday night, by the way, from San Jose. Be sure to listen. Them against the Kings, 7:30 p.m. Puck drop there. Okay, so by the way, a little more what we're watching for on the weekend here. Of course, Fresno State football, 7:30 tomorrow. You've got Fresno State men's basketball tomorrow. I believe it's a 2 p.m. tip against the Long Beach State. What are they? What's their mascot?
The Sandbags? No, the
Sandbags.
No, they got a weird here. I'll look it up.
You look it up while I give more updates here. Of course, going on right now, some NBA Cup action. My Golden State Warriors, with a victory over the Pelicans right now, would get into the knockout stage. They would. Well, they also need a Nuggets loss tonight as well in the group stage. But it would be very, very advantageous for them to get a victory here over New Orleans. New Orleans playing them pretty good, though. New Orleans always kind of plays them pretty good. This is in New Orleans. New Orleans leading 23-19 right now, halfway through the first quarter of this one over Golden State. But this Warriors team's been a really fun one. By the way, you want to hear a stat? Kendrick Lamar dropped an album today. The other four times Kendrick's dropped an album, Warriors have won an NBA title. So, causation and correlation? I think so. So, book it now. Warriors, title. Book it. Go bet on it. There we go. You heard it here first. Anyways, Ori, you got that answer for us, or are you still searching? Still searching?
I'm still searching.
Hold on. Let me see if I can help on the search machine here. Long Beach.
The shark?
State mascot. Elby? They're not the Sharks, are they? No, that can't be right.
They're
a Toro. They're a Toro. That's what it is. Yeah, they're Toros. Yep, I remember that now. There you go. Cal State Long Beach Toros, but there's a shark there. Yeah, Elby the shark, by the way. He looks cool. Standing on his two fins.
How are they the Toros and they have a shark?
It's a whole thing. It's just a whole thing, Jorge. All right, we're getting closer and closer to the end of the show. What... We do our score predictions, right? We didn't do one last week.
You know who I was thinking of? The baseball team. They're the Dirtbags.
The Dirtbags, yes.
Yes.
That's just a baseball-centric. We're the Diamond Dogs, but we're not technically the Diamond Dogs. We're the Bulldogs. All right, Jorge. Fresno State, potentially in the rain, against Colorado State. Two-game losing streak, coming off a bye. Last home game of the year, senior night. Chance to play spoiler. What is your prediction for Saturday?
I'm going to make it a four-point game. Make it 20-24.
Who?
Dogs.
Dogs?
Yeah.
Dogs win. According to Jorge. What do we got here? It's a traditional offense. Colorado State won't beat themselves. You got to beat Colorado State yourself. You got to make it happen on that side of the ball, on both sides of the ball. You got to make everything go. You have to play as a complete team. Fresno State's been dying to have a game like this. It's been frustrating when you have one unit play well and another unit not. Let's see if we can show out one last time. Ryan Matthews, I think, was in town, gave some word of inspiration. I think that gives us enough to get to over 100 yards on run game. We control the clock. Let's make it happen. Dogs win 35-21. There I go. And that's the end of the show. Thanks for listening, folks. Friday Night Lights coming up tonight. Be sure to listen then. 6:45 pregame. We'll see you there.